there. You're listening to the Only Schoolers podcast. I'm Gina Prosh, and hanging out here with me, as always, is my co-host, Kristen Edwards.
I am right here, and I am ready to play around talking about more of our favorite quotes. We have covered a lot of ground this season with these kind of wonderful and thought-provoking quotes that we found. We're starting our third month of season four, so please jump online. Let us know what you're thinking about the quotes we've put under the microscope so far. And please, please share any additional quotes that relate to the topics that we've tackled so far that you've found.
At www.onlyschoolers.com, you will find the complete list of quotes we've referenced after each episode. So if you want a handy list, that is the place to find it.
If you're looking for us online, just search for our Only Schoolers handle. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, and now we are also on Substack.
Yes, we have our very first What If Wednesday mailer queued up and ready to go next Wednesday, September 7th. So head to onlyschoolers.substack.com and sign up, and you will not miss a thing.
In addition, we'll be using that Substack mailer to keep you up to date on everything Only Schoolers, and there's a lot. For instance, our new set of Only Schoolers bookmarks, they are coming out soon as a PDF download at our Etsy shop. This digital download will include our original bookmark set from the beginning of season one, as well as a new hashtag quote set from the current season.
And this is one instance when we will really, really, really love it if you tell all of your homeschool friends what we're up to. If you are part of a homeschool group mailing list, we'd love it if you would let them know too. The more people who sign up for our Substack, the better off we are, and the more our Only Schoolers community will grow.
And just like with our social media posts, just please hit that share button. Pass our posts and emails along to all your friends.
Oh, and we've expanded on Facebook with an Only Schoolers private group. So if you are not already a member, just give us a search. Look for the Only Schoolers Teachers Lounge and ask to join. So today, September 1st, and since it's not quite Labor Day, it's, I guess, still officially summer, but we're definitely in the thick of back-to-school season. Have you in September gotten into the swing of things so far?
Yeah, we kind of eased back in probably about the beginning of August with just a few classes, and we feathered in a few more over the last week. So we are pretty much up to our full schedule now. How about Wyatt? How's he doing?
He has officially started his college career. Yay. He is at State Tech. And since the first day of classes was August 23rd, he's already got a couple of weeks under his belt. So far, he has really been enjoying it, kind of finding his way in this new phase of his life.
Yeah. And what about you? How are you finding this new phase of life?
I am actually finding it fairly exciting as well. First, because it really is fun to watch everything that's going on with Wyatt now. It's, you know, proof of concept, homeschooling, it works. Secondly, I've also got a new project of my own under development. So last year, I signed a contract for a children's book with Boys Town Press based on my This Day's Joy books. However, this book is for the little ones, and it's called Joy, You Find What You Look For. And because this is a picture book, a lot of August has been, well, what hasn't been spent on Only Schooler stuff has been devoted to figuring out how this book is going to come together.
Okay, so I'm curious here. I've heard a couple different things about books. How much input do you get in the illustration process? Because I can't imagine putting in that much work on a book, I mean, really your heart and soul, and all the characters, only to have someone artistically represent them in a way that you really don't like.
Yeah, I have been super fortunate with Boys Town Press. They have been amazing to work with. So they gave me a kind of a portfolio of different illustrators that they work with, different artistic styles, things like that. So I narrowed it down to a short list that I sent back to them. And then based on the availability of the artists, they selected one. So my illustrator for the book is Kyle Merriman, and he has done illustrations for Julia Cook's books. So I was really excited. Then first they asked me kind of what I'd like for an illustration style. After that sort of thing, they were asking questions like, you know, well, what does Holly look like? What does her mom look like? What kinds of hair do they have? What shapes are their faces? So it has been a lot of fun piecing together all these little parts, and I've tried to be present and mindful and just really soak it in. And if you haven't ever looked for Boys Town Press books, you can visit their online store at boystownpress.org. Got all kinds of good stuff there for kids.
And since we're talking about a children's book, which is very exciting and I can't wait to get my hands on it, that kind of brings us around to our topic for today's episode. We're calling it Wanna Go Play? And all of our hashtag quotes pertain to younger kids and the importance of play.
You know, the older I get, the older Wyatt has gotten, the more passionate I have become about those early years of learning. In our last episode about the cult of busy, we talked about how not only is it okay to take things slowly, it's actually desirable to take things slowly. And nowhere, I mean, nowhere is that advice more relevant and more important than when our kids are little, because they are small for such a short time. There is plenty of time to do school when they're school-aged.
Oh, yes. I do not regret for a moment all the time we spent playing and exploring outside when September was a wee one. I mean, honestly, those adventures were such a great building block for when we did start doing school. So, with that in mind, what quotations have we come up with for today?
Well, to begin, we have the same basic message from three experts in early childhood. We've got Piaget, who said, play is the work of childhood. And then Maria Montessori, who said, play is the work of the child. And Captain Kangaroo, who said, play is the work of children and it's very serious stuff.
Okay, I love that Captain Kangaroo is on our list. So from those perfect quotes about play and children, it's just a quick hop and a skip to Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Fred Rogers said, play is often talked about as if it were a relief from serious learning. But for children, play is serious learning. And Mr. Rogers followed that with, play gives children a chance to practice what they're learning. And I have found both of those things to be incredibly true over the years.
So we've been talking about how philosophically I'm not simpatico with Plato. But to prove that I am not totally heartless and unfeeling, I am granting Plato a special dispensation in this episode in order to include his quote, do not keep children to their studies by compulsion, but by play. And I'd kind of like to pair that up with a quote from Leo Buscaglia, who said, it's paradoxical that many educators and parents still differentiate between a time for learning and a time for play without seeing the vital connection between them.
And to wrap things up, we'll be ending with a quote from one of our favorite guys, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Now, we'll have to go back and check, but Gina, I think we've included quotes from Emerson or Thoreau in just about every episode so far this season. So obviously, we really like these guys. Anyway, for today's show, we're turning to Emerson, who said, it is a happy talent to know how to play. So we want to think about that quotation, not just for the children, but also in terms of adults in the homeschool room.
Oh, because sometimes as adults, we just get so serious.
Yes, we do. And speaking of serious, I've got the Only Schooler soapbox right here. So go ahead, jump on up there and get us started with the Piaget, Montessori, Captain Kangaroo idea that play is the work of childhood.
Okay, so the idea for this episode's topic comes straight off the pages of social media and all of the homeschool posts that start off with, I want to homeschool my three-year-old. What curriculum should I use? And I mean, honestly, every time I see those kinds of comments, I just want to start typing in all capital letters. Just let them play. Play, 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 play. Remember, listeners, Piaget, Montessori, and Captain Kangaroo cannot all be wrong. Through the power of play, kids gain an understanding of how the world really functions on a very deep, very meaningful, and sometimes very painful level. Or, as Mark Twain said, a man who carries a cat by the tail learns something he can learn no other way.
Talk about a painful and meaningful lesson. As someone who owns cats, I can attest to that. Okay, so full disclosure, I have grabbed a cat's tail to pull said cat out of danger, mind you. And I was scratched for my heroic gesture. So it was Loki when he was a tiny kitten, and you know cats, super curious. I was putting stuff away in our hall closet, which also happens to have a laundry chute that goes straight down to the basement floor. Well, Loki got a little bit too close to the edge, and his little paws are scrambling, and like he's about to take a header. So the only part I could grab was his tail to pull him back so he didn't go to the basement floor. He was not happy with that. But what Twain said about cats is also very true of play. Play improves a child's spatial awareness and vestibular senses. Play encourages curiosity. So I like to tease my cats when they start messing with, if I bring something new into the house, and I'll tell them, hey, curiosity killed the cat, guys. But honestly, I mean, I'm thinking, where would we be without curiosity? Much like cats, and they, you know, they have to sniff and paw and tap at every new thing, kids need to have that tactile exploration of their world too. They need to touch and poke and smell and hear and, hey, maybe even lick, no judgment here, to see how something fits into their space. All of that exploration helps them interact with their environment and helps them move around in it safely. It's the difference between knowing that you can run quickly on grass, but you'll lose your balance and sink into slop if you try to run in mud after a heavy rain, or you'll tear up your feet if you try to run barefoot on sharp gravel, you know? If you never explore the grassy ground or play in the mud hole or touch the pointy rocks, you won't have a place to start formulating an idea about which surface would be best to run on.
And play does other things, like it improves a child's interpersonal skills. It teaches kids about physical laws of nature. And it helps kids deal with stress because it gets them outside in the real world. And these are just a few of the really great reasons to put a serious focus on play.
Reading books aloud, it's part of play too. It's that exploration of emotions and drama, and you even get to do all the voices and act out your favorite parts. So there used to be this play structure in a park in Jeff City. It was really fabulous. It was this great big old wooden structure. So after we read The Door in the Wall, which if you haven't read it, it's a fabulous middle grade novel by Marguerite D'Angeli, you can bet that the next time that September and I were at that park, we climbed onto that play structure and we defended our castle against the encroaching Welsh army. Seriously, in the hands of a child, anything becomes play, and that's a good thing.
And one thing to get squared away right now, when we are talking about play, we are not talking about screenplay. This isn't hand your toddler a phone and let her zone out. We are talking about real world, roll around on the ground, climb a tree, eat dirt kind of play.
Yes, we're envisioning kids who are engaged in imaginative play with dolls or action figures. Maybe they're acting out scenarios from books. Maybe they're making mud pies for the fairy homes in the woods. Maybe they're counting to make sure there's enough mud pies for the entire fairy band. We're talking about the reason there's play clothes. These clothes are going to get muddy and stained and torn because the kids are actively exploring their world.
So with all of these really great opportunities for different kinds of play and the positive things that occur as a result of play, why bog down itty bitty kids with a curriculum? Even the most well-meaning curriculum, because when you really get down to it, all you need to do is play, play, play. So how about we start here? When did you begin to understand how important play was for kids? And when did you realize that for a little one, a day of play was a day of work?
Honestly, I think coming late to motherhood for me was part of it. I was just kind of really more relaxed about, you know, all that reaching milestone stuff. I was just happy to be hanging out with my girl, doing whatever caught our fancy. And let me tell you, so many things caught our fancy. She was always talking to her babies. At the time, that was Adora Doll and her Duckster. She would make up words. She would invent her own language. I mean, even from a very young age, like around 3, she was creating these worlds where the three of them had, I mean, from the sound of it, I didn't understand what they were saying. They were having really fun adventures. I mean, some of it I could decipher. I mean, a lot of it was a mystery. But I'm thinking now that was probably the beginning of her interest in language, or, you know, at least in inventive ways of communicating. What I remember most is that she was constantly in motion, just really seeking out that vestibular sensory input.
So if you don't know what we mean by vestibular, there's a really long sciencey explanation for it, but boiled down, it's centered in your inner ear. And it's what helps us make sense of where our bodies are in the space that we occupy. It's what lets you be able to watch a movie, eat popcorn, and get the popcorn in your mouth. We'll link to some articles if you want to read more about it and its connection to play.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you see kids do, but you don't really have a name for it until you look it up. So mostly it was September just spinning madly in any office chair she could find or any park thing that would go in circles. She would lay full length on the floor to read, just kind of really pressing her body into the floor surface. She would bounce on a trampoline. I mean, just anything to create sensory input. We played on her swing set all the time. And she would do just the craziest things on her trapeze swing bars. I remember one time she's playing and she's just chattering away. And she's saying, do you feel frightened when I did that, Mama? Are you spellbound yet?
And were you? Were you frightened? Were you spellbound? And can I just say that I love that you're just sitting back watching while she throws herself around on a swing set instead of telling her, oh, stop, you're going to get hurt.
There's a fine line to walk there, but I do think it's important that we let kids push their physical boundaries, especially when we're right there to help if they get scared or stuck. I mean, you are forced to figure out all sorts of things about physics and gravity when you're on a swing set. But to answer your question, yes, I was totally spellbound. I asked her where she learned all those amazing tricks, and her answer, it just still makes me laugh when I think about it. She's like, oh, Mama, I was trained by monkeys. In fact, I think I wish I was a monkey. So what are some of the ways that you saw the importance of play for Wyatt?
When I saw Wyatt playing, I really saw him learning and engaging in just very real, very important ways. I mean, you've mentioned kids playing and learning about physical laws of nature. And for us, play was just a huge part of that. Play leads to curiosity. And it really is true. You know, for several summers, we had an inflatable pool in our driveway and he was endlessly curious. You know, why does this float and why does this sink? Why is the water colder at the bottom and warmer at the top of the pool? Just that one thing inspired so many questions. From playing with his wooden blocks, he learned that when he dropped a block, it always, always, always went down and hit the ground. It never like magically flew up out of his hand. We're in central Missouri, so we have a sloping backyard because I think everyone in central Missouri has a sloping backyard. But we put a slip and slide on the slope and, you know, he never rolled up a hill.
No, unfortunately, uphill always involves a lot more trudging than rolling.
He also never, you know, jumped out of a swing and floated away because that's gravity, folks. And he learned about it in a sciencey way. And also in a practical life skills kind of way, you know, that don't climb on the roof of the house because it's a long way down. From playing outside in all kinds of weather and splashing in puddles or making snowballs, he learned that rain was wet and snow was cold. Again, science and various kinds of precipitation and practical life skills. Carry an umbrella, wear a coat, put on your boots. When we played board games, you know, he learned about math and counting because, you know, every now and then I might miscount my spaces so I could avoid landing on a chute or some other terrible board game fate if it was just, you know, one more game before bedtime.
You would cheat your own kid at Candyland. I'm trying to sound shocked and horrified here, but I'm the mom who strategically shuffled the cards to achieve the same ends. Let's get to bed on time tonight.
Exactly. This is why we're friends. But you know, you play Chutes and Ladders, you play Candyland, and wow, all of a sudden his counting skills improved. He also learned that if he wouldn't let me cheat, then I wasn't going to let him cheat because sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. That is a huge interpersonal skills lesson about, you know, taking turns and understanding that games go best when everyone plays by the same rules. So yes, play led to a sense of empathy and it all goes back to Candyland, people.
So many good lessons from Candyland. Play is a huge stress relief outlet for kids. And with the current mental health crisis with kids of very young ages, play becomes even more important than ever, I think.
Oh, kids need to move. They are simply not designed to sit in chairs and listen attentively and then do pristine work that is not educationally appropriate for them in the first place. It breaks my heart to think of all these little kids who are getting into trouble for being squirmy, wormy little people when that's what they're supposed to be at that age. You know, there's no pre-K kindergarten kid who even needs to hear the word college readiness. So anyway, when Wyatt had been in situations that required him to be more quiet, say going to church or something, We knew that he then needed the opportunity to head outside to play, to get on the swing set and slide afterward. Play became a primary way to blow off some steam.
And he still really does that today, doesn't he?
Oh, absolutely. If he has had too much of the world, he will go outside for a walk around the farm because he's learned that being outside and being active are great stress relievers at any age. I mean, particularly during COVID, his being outside and working on his cemetery rehab project, those were ways to deal with the stress of this world gone stupid. But, you know, I think it was as a mom with a young child when I saw with my own eyes just how much Wyatt learned through play and engagement with the world that I began to get really passionate about the subject. And, you know, in retrospect, it's probably no great surprise that we ended up as unschoolers. So here's a question. Why do you think parents get caught up in the idea of thinking their very young kids need a curriculum rather than needing to play?
To me, it can be summed up in one word: optics. People are too worried about how it looks if their child isn't doing something amazing at an incredibly young age. It's kind of a constant competition, and you see it, it's played out. It's just another version of the mommy wars. Oh, Johnny counted his Cheerios up to 10. That's fabulous. Did I tell you Susie put together a 500-piece puzzle the other day? I mean, why? So to catch up, now you're Googling every math and logic toy on the market so Johnny sounds more impressive next time. But again, why? I mean, seriously, your kids don't have to measure up to anyone but themselves. And I feel like I need to say that again. Your kids don't have to measure up to anyone but themselves. And you don't have to justify their existence by turning them into little Einsteins. Expose them to the beauty of music and art and books and math. Math is beautiful, absolutely. But just as a background to the serious work of play that they're already engaged in. As long as they're making measurable and meaningful progress on their own goals and their own milestones, don't you worry about what Susie's doing. So what about you? What's your take on the why?
Well, I think you're definitely onto something with that competitiveness, mommy wars aspect of things. Sometimes stay-at-home parents may try to push curriculum onto their kids because they hear their daycare parent friends talking about the curriculum that's being used in a preschool and they feel less than or something. Maybe they're more concerned about proving something to their family or to their friends or neighbors. But what's best for kids is play, because play is serious business. Which brings us to Mr. Rogers.
Like we said earlier, Mr. Rogers said, play is often talked about as if it were a relief from serious learning. But for children, play is the serious learning. And he also said, play gives children a chance to practice what they're learning. So if you've ever seen kids play, you can see it in their faces. There's joy, there's happiness. I mean, they're having fun. That's play. But there's also kind of a furrowed brow sometimes, maybe a scrunched up forehead, because they're encountering problems and challenges while they play, and they've got to turn that over in their brain. That's the working part. So do you have an example of play as serious learning?
Oh, most definitely. Playing with Mega Blocks or Legos. Through play, kids learn that 2 1-peg blocks cover the same amount of space as a single 2-peg block. And that becomes adding, and that's equivalencies. Playing with blocks, they will learn to count and add and subtract. We are talking practical application of important mathematical principles. And at that young age, they don't need worksheets. They just really need a bunch of blocks. And I actually think that's why we did so well with math. You see, we weren't doing math as much as we were playing with a bunch of little blocks. We also practiced a lot of math in the kitchen while we cooked. Doubled recipes, cut recipes in half, counting the eggs that we would drop into a recipe. He never even gave math a second thought. We were just having fun in the kitchen. But let me tell you, those brownies, those chocolate chip cookies, those were serious business.
And now I'm hungry for a chocolate chip cookie. Thank you. I'm going to go work on some math today. But here we are at Plato's quote. Do not keep children to their studies by compulsion, but by play, which we are pairing with Leo Buscaglia. It is paradoxical that many educators and parents still differentiate between a time for learning and a time for play without seeing the vital connection between them.
You know, I picked that Biscaglia quote because it resonated so strongly with me, reminding me of times when Wyatt was older, but play still formed a core of his learning. So when Wyatt was little, his two favorite things to play with were trains and blocks. So with trains, it was the wooden Brio trains, and then he moved up to electric trains, the blocks he often used to make trains. So one of the best things that ever happened to him, we were at an antique shop and he spent about $20 of his own money buying a train engine. And when we got it home, it didn't work.
Oh, ouch.
He was so sad. And then he was angry. And then he decided he was going to have to figure out how to fix it himself because he didn't have any more money to spend to send the train off to a fix-it guy. He said it was already broken, so he probably wouldn't make it more broken. I said, yeah, that's a good strategy. So he took it apart and he fiddled and he fixed. And finally, he kind of got it running. He took it apart again. He worked on it some more. Today, if a train isn't working and Wyatt can't fix it, it's because it really is broken beyond repair. But here's the thing. He wanted to play with the train, but he had to learn how he could fix it so that he could play with it. It was really one big educational loop.
Which just shows that the time for play is also a time for learning, and there's not really a distinction between them, especially for children.
And Wyatt did the exact same thing with Legos during his clock phase. Yes, he played with Legos, but he was trying to build a functioning cuckoo clock out of Legos. So it was play, but it was also applied science. And he was learning about gears and, you know, larger gears and smaller gears and how they worked and why they were useful and so many other things, weights and counterweights. It also became an art project because he wanted his cuckoo clock to look like a cuckoo clock. As Plato suggested, we did not have to force him to work on this cuckoo clock. There was no compulsion. There was no, you have to do this. We just let him play around with it. And that sense of play is what kept him at his work, tinkering and tinkering and tinkering with the clock until he got it to work the way he wanted it. And like Biscaglia said, there's a vital connection between that time for learning and time for play. In our homeschool, those two things really are super connected, but it's really a good thing and it makes everybody happier. How about you in September?
You know, you're talking about Wyatt and the clock, and it just made me think about how September kind of approaches art and how she draws. I mean, she has taken different online classes, you know, storyboarding, cartooning, that sort of thing. And so she knows, she's learned the techniques. But then she'll play around the rest of the day, the rest of the week. Some of these things take months until she gets it the way she wants it to look. And she'll just play around with a sketch, with an idea that she's got. I mean, she's just doodling away. She's bringing this idea to life. And it looks like work. And for her, I mean, it is work. But it's also really fun and really relaxing just to sort of engage that playful side of incorporating work into what she's doing. I mean, learning while playing, they're both incredibly connected. Another connection that comes to mind is when I see someone in a homeschool Facebook group and they ask about spelling and how do I get my kids to spell and what sources do you use for spelling? And I always immediately reply, Scrabble and Bananagrams. And I'm not even joking. I mean, those are great ways to learn how to spell. Because when you combine learning with play, kids respond to it. I mean, September and I played, who am I kidding? We still play. We play games all the time. If you're having trouble with multiplication, here's what we did. You grab a Yahtzee game. Bonus, if it's Super Mario Yahtzee, and you get to say those miserable Yoshis every time you roll the Yoshi eggs instead of the icon you really want.
And you are the mom who did all the voices for read alouds, aren't you?
Oh, you know it. I really need to take another crack at the Secret Garden because I've been working on my Yorkshire accent. But now that we're in high school, I would say the connection between learning and play maybe isn't quite as much. But boy, we worked it in those early years. And I'm not talking about making learning fun. I mean, we did that too. We played hopscotch to conjugate French verbs, stuff like that. I'm talking about playing as playing around as part of what you're doing. So maybe she's playing around with watercolors. What happens if you put more water, less water? What if you add some salt to this? How does that affect the image that you're trying to create? What about dancing around? You're listening to Beethoven. How does that make you move versus when you dance to Chopin? Maybe you put in the soundtrack to Dora's World Adventure, one of our favorites when she was young. It's a totally different kind of dance that you do based on what you're hearing. And so here we are to Emerson, who said, "It is a happy talent to know how to play."
Another question for you. How many times have I heard you say you were playing around with a recipe, trying to recreate something you'd eaten out at a restaurant?
All the time. The kitchen is my playground. It's my stress reliever. It's my curiosity zone. Sure, it's where I make food too, but I think the other things are more priority. So recently, September's really gotten into Indian food. I mean, they have a lot of vegetarian options that kind of fits right into this sort of vegetarian eating style that she's adopted. However, the closest Indian restaurant is 40 minutes away. Now, we do eat there quite a lot, but not all the time. So that means I've been Googling our favorites and I've been playing around with them, trying to get them to taste the same at home. Sometimes I am really successful. Sometimes I need to play around a little bit more. But it's the kind of learning that's really fun for me and it makes me happy. So I think Emerson really hit the nail on the head there.
It is the exact same thing for me with fabric and whatever quilting project I've got going at the time. It is math, trying to figure out how much fabric you need. It is geometry, angles, all kinds of things like that. It's creative. And even when I've got a seam ripper in my hand and I'm cussing like a sailor and my guys are kind of tiptoeing around like, "Are you sure you're having a good time over there?" There is a sense of adventure and fun and playfulness in what I'm doing. And when it is all said and done, I am able to look at it and say that I had a great time making that. But...
oh, why is there always a but?
Because it seems like there's always a but. And in this case, it's the fact that, yes, while it may be a happy talent to know how to play, I think it can be something that we as adults can sometimes find challenging because we get so doggone serious. I know I can be totally guilty of this. So we talked about in our last episode, The Cult of Busy. You get caught up in laundry or what we're having for dinner or deadlines or, you know, all of the 101 things that make up adult life on a daily basis. So I kind of forget to have fun, or maybe I don't make a point of having fun. Which one do you think it is? Is it forgetting or is it not making a point? And if so, what's your advice for maintaining that sense of playful as an adult, especially an adult home educator where we're modeling for our kids?
I don't think it's so much that we're forgetting how to have fun as it is that we just think we're supposed to be so responsible first. You know, got awesome adulting, right? By the time we've crossed all of the to-dos off our list, we're too tired. So, I mean, this is going to sound weird. I schedule it. I schedule fun for myself. And I know fun seems like it should be more spontaneous. And there are times when it is, but you know, I'm not in my 20s anymore. Curling up for an hour with a book and a cup of tea, that kind of sounds fun. Maybe scheduling some time to fix a bowl of popcorn and turn the TV on. That sounds pretty darn fun to me too. I think it's an idea that we need to engage in things that make us happy and our kids see us do that. For more off-the-cuff fun, I like to sing loudly in the car. I like to send random memes and YouTube videos to September. We have so much fun sharing those things. I like to scoop up a cat. We've got four to choose from. Whichever one walks by me gets to have a ridiculous conversation. And we have it loud enough, just loud enough, that September comes out to join in. Maintaining that sense of fun makes sure that when September's off to college, she has plenty of stories to tell about her wackadoodle mom. Plus, hopefully she'll miss being a part of it. Ha ha, evil plan accomplished. But what about you? How do you keep fun in the homeschool?
Well, one of my favorite memories was the year that we skipped school on the first day of school just because we could, because we were homeschoolers. And if we want to skip school, we can. So there. I think school pets help too. It is hard to be completely serious when the dog or the cat is doing something super stupid. So kind of like you and your imaginary conversations. Emphasizing ownership of education is a huge component of what it means for school to be fun. Because if you are doing something, learning something that you're interested in and you want to learn about, that's fun. And unschooling definitely increased the level of fun in our homeschool. Sometimes I really just have to remind myself, like I'm going to remind all of you listeners out there in podcast land right now, lighten up, people. Life doesn't have to be drudgery. In fact, it shouldn't be drudgery. Sometimes I think we believe play means there's no merit to what's happening. But that's simply not the case. Learning doesn't have to be a pain in the neck just to count as learning. What if the reason so many people have no interest in lifelong learning is the fact that we've made it into such a total pain in the tuchus all their lives? It's good for our kids to play. It's good for us to play along with them, period.
So what do you think, listeners? Where and how does a sense of play fit into your homeschool? What benefits have you seen from emphasizing more play-based learning? Hop onto Facebook, Instagram. Let's continue this conversation. Our handle is onlyschoolers at both places. If email's your thing and you'd rather have a longer conversation, we love to answer email. So send us a line at onlyschoolers@gmail.com.
And remember to sign up for our new Only Schoolers Substack newsletter. We are starting our What If Wednesdays this coming Wednesday, September 7th. Our first topic we're tackling is the what if I want to start homeschooling, but I don't know where to start.
And to get your back to school season off to a great start, expand your homeschool vocabulary by picking up your copy of A Homeschool Vocabulary, A to Z with the Only Schoolers. You can buy it now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, lots of other retailers. If you would like a signed book plate for it, head to our website at onlyschoolers.com and we'll be happy to get that in the mail to you.
We know your time is valuable, but if you have a moment to drop a review or a rating of the book at Amazon or wherever, that would be incredibly awesome.
And if you enjoy the podcast, please consider supporting us financially. Visit us at onlyschoolers.com and you can drop a little something in the Only Schoolers tip jar.
Thank you so much for joining us today as we frolicked and played around with the idea that play is the work of childhood. So set aside the books and pencils and focus on learning through play. Join us again in a couple of weeks for more #quotes.